Hello, and welcome to another fascinating issue of Charlie Cook's Insider Circle Monthly audio programs, jam-packed with the most realistic, practical, and up-to-date money-making secrets. Your host is Charlie Cook. Charlie's been helping business owners attract more clients and maximize their profits for over two decades. And while most people were still trying to figure out how to use the web, Charlie sold his second website for just under $1 million. Today, Charlie is one of the most sought-after business mentors on the web and a best-selling author, recommended by some of the top marketing and sales experts of all time, including Brian Tracy, Tom Hopkins, J. Conrad Levinson, as well as online entrepreneurs like Yannick Silver. To get the maximum benefit out of this month's program, ask yourself these questions during the interview. How can I apply these ideas to my business and to my life? How can I do things differently and get better results? And what actions can I take today, this week, and this month to reach my goals? And you'll want to listen to the interview more than once. Every time you do, you'll discover new ideas, new strategies, and new ways to sell more of your products and services, make more money, and be more successful. Own a business? Want to generate more leads and sales? Everyone knows that one of the quickest ways to get attention is to buy it with advertising. But almost every entrepreneur or business owner who has tried it has come away disappointed and lost money in the process. What gives? The simple truth is that most advertising doesn't work the way it should. But why not? On this CD, Charlie interviews Roy Williams, New York Times and Wall Street Journal best-selling author of the best-selling The Wizard of Ads and The Secret Formulas of The Wizard of Ads and Magical Words of The Wizard of Ads, Tools and Techniques for Profitable Persuasion. He's known for writing miracle-producing radio ads that have reached in excess of 1 million people. In the next few minutes, Roy will take advertising and turn it upside down, right side up, and inside out. You'll discover what works, what doesn't, and how to maximize the return on your advertising dollars.
Hello, this is Charlie Cook, and every week I get emails from business owners struggling to ramp up their sales. Over and over, people tell me they've tried advertising and it doesn't work, that they've paid thousands, if not tens of thousands of dollars for an ad and hardly generated a single sale. The result is that most business owners feel burned by advertising. They've tried it and feel like they'd be better off just lighting a match to a pile of dollar bills. And now in this recession, people are even more cost conscious and are just giving up on advertising. Is that the right move? Should you give up on advertising? Today I have the pleasure of talking with Roy Williams, whose ads have performed miracles, bringing in a flood of leads and sales. And that's just what almost every business owner I know is looking for in these tough times. Roy, welcome to the call.
Hey, it's great to be on with you, Charlie.
Glad to have you. Roy, thanks for joining us. Can you start by telling us a little bit about your background? How and when did you get started in marketing and advertising?
Okay, 18 years old, had a full scholarship to college. I went a day and a half. Realize these are the same lightweight, boring teachers I've been trying to get away from for 12 years. And so I quit, dropped out, and took a job at the number 23 radio station in a city of 23 radio stations.
Okay.
Yeah, it was Tulsa, Oklahoma. And in a city of 1 million people, we had 19,000 listeners, if you counted everybody that would tune in for at least 5 minutes at some point during the week. The average quarter hour, meaning the number of people listening at any given moment, was about 800 people. This is a city of 1 million. But I had this idea. I said, you know what? If I can get like half of those 800 people to actually do what I'm telling them, then, you know, this will work. And so I knew that I was going to have to say something that would move people. I couldn't count on raw numbers. And the result was that I became an extremely famous ad writer, started sending out little memos once a week by fax, and then the internet came along, and we send those by email today, and have about 43,000 subscribers. And back in 1998, 100 of those little memos were put together, and it became Business Book of the Year for 1998, the book called The Wizard of Ads. The next year, the publisher took another 100 of those little memos that I'd written over the years, and it became a New York Times bestseller and the Wall Street Journal number one business book in America. And the third book did the same, and we started building a school. It's a non-traditional business school here in Austin, Texas. We have a 32-acre campus, and that brings us up to date.
Wow. Well, that's also a good lesson there on, you know, if anybody has ever sort of thought, I can never write a book, you know, one memo at a time, you wrote three and ended up creating a school.
Mm-hmm.
Before we get into the details of how people can write miracle ads and map out what people should be doing to make money with their ads, can you share with us what are the most common mistakes businesses make with their advertising, or in my book, the most important thing to do in order to be successful is to, you know, what they should stop doing first?
Yeah. Stop trying to reach the right people. Everybody thinks that the secret of success is to reach the right people, if only I could get the right mailing list or whatever. And that typically leads to disaster.
Maybe you can just explain that a little more, because, you know, I think everybody's, you know, gut is that they're supposed to be focused on reaching their target market, so why is that not the right thing?
When you're thinking that somewhere out there are these right people, and your energy is living in this fantasy land that if you could only reach the right people that they would care what you're saying, you wind up never agonizing and being objective enough or brutal enough to yourself regarding your message. The fact is that writing ads is easy when you have something to say. And most advertisers don't really have anything to say. They just wish that people would give them money. And they think that if they reach the right people that that's going to happen. And it's like, no. A huge percentage of the population becomes the right people, or they become ambassadors and evangelists who can reach the right people for you when you say something remarkable. It was a guy, I forget his name, but he was a guy that actually pioneered Geek Squad, Robert somebody, I think, and he's now an executive VP at Best Buy. And he said something very powerful, and it's also true. He said, advertising is a tax we pay for being unremarkable.
So, you know, if we were to look at why most ads don't work, you would probably, you know, would you concur that it's that they're not remarkable enough?
Right. The bottom line is most ads are written from the perspective of the advertiser. They say, oh, I'm spending this money. This is my space. This is my banner. This is my 60 or 30 seconds. And they say, you know, by golly, I'm going to talk about me. Bad ads, Charlie, are about you or your absurd little company. Nobody cares. Good ads are about your product or your service and what it will do to change the world of the reader, the listener, or the viewer.
So just to summarize here, a good ad is going to help the prospect, listener, understand how their world could be better off.
Well, in other words, talk to me about what's in it for me. I frankly don't care about you. If I needed a friend, I'd buy a dog. So don't tell me about you and your company and what you believe and your values and what you stand for and your culture and your integrity. And it's like, shut up. Just tell me what you actually have for me. And this is why most ads are bad, Charlie, because people who sell advertising, they study selling advertising. They study how to sell it. Nobody studies how to make it work. A consultant is somebody who has lost tens of millions of dollars of other people's money doing things that made perfect sense but didn't work. And they finally figure out, as the years go by, oh, gee, when you talk to the customer about the things the customer cares about, not what you wish they would care about, but what they actually care about, then, gee, it works.
Right. You get people's attention because you're talking about what's the conversation they're having in their head.
This happened yesterday. A friend of mine was down here from Chapel Hill, North Carolina. His name is Berkeley Grimble. He has Grimble's Jewelers. Okay? Little bitty trade area of about 40,000 people. And we were having a class. And I said, okay, Berkeley, what business are you in? He said, I'm a jeweler. And I said, and what's really remarkable about you is, oh, we have a big shop. We have a shop with expert craftsmen. I said, shut up. Nobody cares. There's no possible way I can make anybody care about your shop. You know they should care. You really wish they would care, but they're not gonna. And I said, now, choke on that for a while, because it's not going to change. I'm not going to let you talk about your shop. And this is why most ads fail. It's because if Berkeley Grimble tells an advertising salesperson, by golly, we need to get them to understand that we're more qualified and we have more experience, we have this big shop and these expert craftsmen, and they really think they're going to figure out some way to make people really understand how important that is, no. There's not enough time in the world. There's not enough money in the world. You're answering a question no one was asking. And so if you're going to talk about how to make ads work, Charlie, it's not that they can't figure out how to say it. The problem is people are just saying the wrong thing. They're talking about stuff nobody cares about. And so the early decision is, what do I really have to say? What do I have to say that will move the needle on the who gives a crap meter?
Let's take it from there. Well, first of all, before we do, I just want to reinforce that I have one client who was, showed me a brochure they were going to send out trying to prompt people to come in for a sale. And what was the picture on it? You know, this is a client that sells Western wear, cowboy boots and hats and whatnot. And the picture on the front of the brochure was a big, nice picture of their one-story building that they have the store in, which, of course, no one cares about.
Yeah, I did a deal in Minneapolis about a year and a half ago, and it was the directors of parks, recreation, and tourism of each of the 50 states. It was a national conference. And I was saying, you know what the big problem is with most ads for, you know, resorts and stuff? It shows you a big picture of the building. And so there's this, you know, tall condo, and you're going to rent a condo in this beachside thing, and you see a picture of the building on the beach. And I said, nobody wants to see the building on the beach. They want to see the view out the window of the room they're going to be in. And so I said, why do you always show them these ego pictures? You got to get past you. It's not about you. It's not about your Western wear store. It's not about the building on the beach. It's about put yourself in the customer's shoes, give them a glimpse of the experience that awaits them.
And that's the primary issue, it seems, in trying to come up with ad copy, is that typically business owners are confused about what they're selling. And in the example you just pointed out, they're not selling the building. They're selling what they get from, you know, if it's the resort being in the building or if it's the Western wear store, from the lifestyle associated with wearing Western wear, et cetera. So
exactly.
The biggest confusion is usually in terms of helping people figure out, you know, what they're selling. So imagine that I just came in and I said, Roy, here's my $5,000, $10,000, $20,000 fee. Help me figure out what to say. What would you do with me besides shake me upside down a couple times?
Honestly, that process takes about 8 hours.
Okay.
Because the paradigm is usually so backwards. Every person, and I'll put 100 people in a room here at the school, and they're all business owners like the people you have listening right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell them, I say, now listen, every one of you, whenever somebody else is up here on the hot seat and I'm talking to them, you'll just be amazed at how they don't seem to understand that I'm telling them the right thing, that I'm giving them perfect advice. Everybody in the room will say, oh my God, why does this person not get it? How much more plain can Roy put it? He's obviously right. And I said, you'll sit there and you'll agree emphatically, and you'll be so frustrated that the person on the chair doesn't get it until it's your turn. And then suddenly, you're on the chair, and you're going, well, gee, he's off the mark this time. He doesn't understand my business. And so everybody laughs, and then at the end of the day, they all have this stunned look. They say, oh, my God, everybody that was up there besides me, I saw exactly what you're saying, and I couldn't possibly agree more. And then I was up there, and exactly what you warned me happened. I felt like you didn't really understand. And so that paradigm shift that has to happen for an advertiser to finally understand, it's not about you and what you think people ought to care about. It's about what they, in fact, do care about. Get in step with that, not what they should care about. Don't quit trying to educate the customer. Speak to the need they feel, not the one they ought to feel.
I can understand how that works for the people who come to your school, sit there, you know, work with you for 8 hours, and they see you go through the process with everybody. For people who don't make it there and are trying to, you know, listen to this and go, okay, I need to make this paradigm shift, what's the best way for them to get it?
Okay, it's very simple. And it's very, very, very simple. Everybody in their world, as a matter of fact, the more they're a stranger to you, the better. People you just almost never talk to, okay? They're not idiots, but neither are they, quote, qualified. They don't know your business. They don't know your business category. They don't understand the complexities of it. And just sit down there, and just the average guy sitting next to you on a bus or on the train or just somebody you're sharing a table with at a park, and they'll say, well, why don't you do this? And you go, oh, no, you don't understand, you know, blah, blah, blah. They're usually right. Usually the thing that they just blurt out, you need to wrap your head around that. You need to say, you know what? What the 7-year-old kid will tell you, it's usually right. It's the simple, straightforward thing that you go, oh, you can't do that, you don't understand. Well, no, you can do it. Figure out how to do it. What they just told you is probably correct.
So if there was, you know, one or two questions that the business owner could ask to get advice from the person on the bus or the person who wanders into their store or somebody they know who want to get some advice, what would be the question?
Easiest thing in the world. I'd say, hi, I'm Roy, and you say, I'm Charlie. I say, Charlie, I'm wrestling with a business decision. I'd like to bounce it off of you. Have you got a minute?
And I say, sure.
Yeah, sure. So here's what I'm up against. And what happens is, if you listen and you don't try to keep correcting the person, if you don't keep trying to educate that person about all these things they don't understand, if you just listen to this incredibly, outrageously oversimplified answer and say, you know what? What he just said can't be done. But what if it could? What would that look like? If I tried to do it, even though it's never been done, can't be done, he doesn't understand. But let me just try to wrap my head around how could I possibly achieve what he or she just said. Now, let me give you a perfect example, okay? This is the kind of thing that's just idiotically simple. Fellow sold frozen custard, which is like real expensive ice cream, basically. And he had been in business for a number of years. It was walk-up and drive-through only, little custard stand, two locations. And I was hired. And I said, what do you want me to make happen? And it was winter time. Charlie, the snow was a foot deep on the ground. There's no inside dining. It's drive-through and walk-up only. And it's a little ice cream stand. That's all they serve. They didn't even serve coffee. And so I said, what do you guys want to happen? They said, well, we're going to spend $10,000. And I said, well, I'm your guy. I can do that. And they said, well, I said, now tell me how we're going to measure success. How are we going to measure progress? How are we going to know if this is working? And they said, well, we want to see 500 new customers. And I said, well, how are you going to know that they're new customers? And they said, trust us. They actually convinced me. They said, so few people come here during the wintertime that when we see a new face, we know it's a new face. Because all day long, the only people we see are people we know. We know their name. We know their dog's name. We know their kid's name. We know these people. And I said, okay, I believe you. Now, the more that I understood the product and the stuff they put in it, I said, this is astounding. This is amazing. This is unbelievable. They said, yeah. And I said, do you care how I spend the $10,000? They said, no. And I said, but we want 500 new faces to come here in the middle of the winter and try this. They said, yeah, because we feel like if they try it, they'll be back. So what I did, I said, okay, here's what I want you to do. I said, how much custard mix does it take to run these machines from 8 o'clock in the morning until midnight nonstop? We had two machines in each of his two locations. He said it would take about $1,700 worth of mix. And I said, well, get the mix in and get a good night's sleep. He said, why? I ran a 60-second radio ad on one little radio station in that town, not even a big one, and it ran twice an hour from 8 o'clock in the morning until midnight for one day. And it said, you know, you've probably never been to Andy's Frozen Custard because it didn't sound like something you would like. Custard, yuck. That doesn't sound good. And so you've drove right past it. Well, we're tired of that. So today, we're giving away, until midnight tonight, no strings attached, a full-size custard cone. These normally sell for $2. It's yours for free. Just walk up, and we're going to hand you one. Drive through, we're going to stick it out the window. And hey, if you don't like it, throw it away. We apologize for wasting 30 seconds of your day. But we're convinced you're going to like it, and you're going to come back here forever. And they're only going to be free once, and it's today. So how many of those do you think we gave away that day?
Quite a few.
$1,700 in custard mix and $500 in advertising. We gave away over 11,000 cones. Business jumped up 80%. In other words, so many people among those 11,000 really said, this is extraordinary stuff. This is unbelievably good. I never knew. And they came back. And they did. They just came back. We had loyal customers. And we almost doubled the business for $2,200.
And do you have any idea of what percentage of those 11,000 that came by for the free ones actually came back and paid?
Well, enough that the business went up 80%. I'm saying It went up 80% long term.
Wow.
I mean, it was a permanent lift in business of 80%. It wasn't that day. It was from then on.
Mm-hmm.
And so the idea is, what's the shortest point? What's the shortest distance from point A to point B? A straight line. And I said, you know what? If I'm trying to get people to try this, custard is cheaper than advertising, Charlie. Now, here's what's interesting. There's no other ad I could have written and run $10,000 worth of advertising, right, and had even 500 people show up. Nobody in the world can promise you 500 new customers for $10,000. This is not going to happen. So I said, let's just remove the obstacle. Custard is cheaper than advertising, and here's the beauty of it. It's prorated. If I don't give away the cones, it doesn't cost me the money. I'm paying for my advertising directly proportional to how well it's working. The more, the better it works, the more it costs me. And so obviously the cones only cost us, you know, pennies a piece, a quarter or something like that. I don't know. And I'm going, how many of you would pay a quarter a piece for a new customer?
And almost anybody would.
Yeah, what I'm saying is the power of a sample. So why don't more people just think of the simple answer? You ask a 7-year-old kid, hey, how could I get more people to buy my custard? He goes, well, let them try some. Well, then the tightwad business owner gets that little wooden spoon and they get a little bit on it and they want to give people a little taste. You know, it's like, oh, shut up. You know, be a man. Give them a whole cone. And so the power of the message is what we're talking about. Now, I forget who it was that said it first, Charlie, but they said when you have, it was actually David Ogilvy, now that I think about it. He said, when you have a powerful message, your secretary can write your ad for you.
Well, that's so the key is coming up with that powerful message.
That's what I'm saying. And so everybody launches into the creative process way too soon. There's no real creative way to say something dull. And so don't think about deliver who we're going to reach and the target and this special technology. And everybody get all worked up about you know, the beauty of the ad and how clever these things are. It's like, no. Don't get creative. Get clear. Make a very clear statement that's just very, I mean, a statement that will bloody people's nose, a statement they cannot ignore. And you got to back it up and make them understand that it's true. And so when you rock their world, you're no longer paying a tax for being unremarkable.
So that was one, you know, great example with the custard. What's your process with, you know, in general with custom people who come to you and say, you know, write me an ad, what's your simple process for helping them get clear?
The first thing I do is I say, look, this is going to hurt. You're going to get furious, but I already have your money, and I'm not giving it back. And so then I say, make me care. And as soon as my mind starts wandering, and I don't really care what you're saying, I'm not going to do what customers knew. I'm not going to pretend to be interested out of courtesy. I'm going to say, shut up, I don't care. And you know what usually happens? It usually takes about an hour and a half before the person who's paid me many thousands of dollars finally realizes, oh, good God, I have spent tens of thousands of dollars, hundreds of thousands of dollars answering questions the public wasn't asking. And they finally catch on. And I said, it's like yesterday when my buddy was here, Berkeley Grimble from Chapel Hill. I did that to him until he finally coughed up something. And I said, okay, now we're getting somewhere. And then we took off with that.
And can you divulge what you the nugget of what he came up with?
No, it was very simple. He had an exceptionally large selection of engagement rings. Now, see, he thought his shop was more important. Nobody cares about the size of your shop. It's like, I don't care. I can't make anybody else care, so shut up. And after a while, we found out he had like 10 times more engagement rings than the average jewelry store. And most people didn't know it.
So the thing that was his differentiator was that he could offer a better selection.
Well, you can't say that because nobody believes you.
Right.
You have to be very specific. Says, you know, the average jewelry store has maybe 50 or 75 different engagement rings. You know, a really good selection is like 100 different engagement rings. Well, you know, at Grimble's Jewelers, we have 1,037 different engagement rings. You can go to 20 different stores, and all 20 stores will have pretty much the same 50 or 100. You come here, we'll show you all the rings you saw in all the other stores, plus six times that many more that nobody else had. And so people are going, I need to at least make sure they're on my list of places to shop.
So be specific.
Yeah, for specifics are always more persuasive than generalities.
So, you know, going back to, you know, the campaign, I don't know if you did that with your jewelry store owner or with somebody else, but if somebody comes to you and says, okay, I don't know what I'm doing with advertising, I've blown it in the past, and I'm at your mercy here, how much should I be spending to start with? And then, you know, let's start with that. You know, how much should I spend on advertising?
Oh, gee. It depends upon your markup above cost of goods.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the average business, if it's a retail business, once upon a time had 100% markup, 50% gross margin. Now, let's assume you buy it for $1 and you sell it for $2, and that you're not going to have to adjust your ad budget according to your markup. Well, your rent plus your advertising, and they both come out of the same pocket, and Charlie, they both accomplish the same thing. Your location gives you exposure. Your advertising gives you exposure. The more you spend on one, the less you have to spend on the other. Therefore, I add the ad budget and the rent budget, the occupancy budget, into one pile. And if you have 100% markup, you need to be spending about 10% to no more than 12% of your gross sales on rent plus advertising. And so you look at, you do $1 million a year, great. You have $100,000 to $120,000 for total cost of exposure. Deduct the rent. If you have a really great location, you don't need to advertise as much, and guess what? You don't have as much money to do it because really great locations cost a lot of money. And so whatever you're paying for rent, deduct it. Whatever's left is the ad budget.
Well, that's pretty simple. In terms of ads, we talked about radio ads, and the examples you've given so far have been, you know, fairly short. And, you know, some people utilize radio. Many people do not. A lot of people are as familiar with sales letters and emails and other things. And there's an age-old question people are always asking, which is better, long or short ad copy?
I'm going to answer it, and then I'm going to back up and qualify the answer, okay?
Okay.
Shorter is always better. But then the ad needs to be as long as it has to be. Some things cannot be said as quickly as others. If you're introducing a product or a concept that has no place in the mind, it isn't something that even people grasp, then it takes longer because there's nothing you can compare it to. So if it's an unknown category, it takes a while to explain why they even need this. But if it is a commodity, if it's something that people fully and completely understand, then shorter is always better. It was actually the Yankelevich organization, Charlie, that in 1978, they did a big study, and they found out the average American encounters about 2,000 different things that we would put under the heading of advertising that clamor for their attention each day. Now, this includes the logo on the shirt of somebody standing across from you. That logo's there hoping that you'll notice it. And as you're driving down the road, the signs in the little storefronts of all the little people and all the little strip centers on both sides of the road, those little signs are there because those business owners hope that you'll notice and read that sign. When you're walking down the aisle in the grocery store, all those packages shouting those brand names at you. So it's pretty easy to believe. 2,000 in one day, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the Yankelevich organization revisited that study last year, 30 years later, in 2008, and it's now more than 5,000.
Oh my God!
Per day. And so you have to stand out from among 5,000 other things that are clamoring for attention. And guess what has gone down as the number of messages has gone up? Attention span. And so you'd better deliver high impact quickly. And once you have their attention, try to hold it for as long as you can. But deliver the totality of your message. It's a law of physics. Impact, according to Isaac Newton, force, impact, is mass times acceleration. Now, mass, Charlie, is the message you're trying to communicate. This is the thought that's in my brain. I'm trying to put it in your brain. That's the mass of the ad. Now, acceleration, how fast can I transfer what's in my brain and put it in yours? That is what gives you impact. If I take an idea and it takes me a long time to put it in your brain, I have no impact. If I take the exact same idea and I completely communicate it to you in a very brief, tight economy of words, the impact is far greater.
So any tips about mass and acceleration? How to
mass times acceleration. Verbs are good. And by the way, the jewelry store thing, that wasn't a radio ad. For a really good writer, Charlie, there's no difference between direct mail, television, radio, email, web pages. It doesn't matter. The right words in the right order are always the right words in the right order. The delivery vehicle simply dictates some tiny little tweaks stylistically. But basically, when you write the right piece of copy, you can deliver it through any form of advertising. And so I don't think of radio ads being different than direct mail, being different than email. They're all the same.
Mm-hmm.
Now, verbs are good. Brilliant writers use more verbs and more interesting verbs. Bad writers use more adjectives and modifiers. And so if I'm going to give people a tip, look at the sentence, and anytime, as a matter of fact, Thomas Jefferson said it best, the most valuable of all skills is never using two words when one will do. And so if you look at a sentence and you can strike a word and the sentence means the same thing, then always strike that word. Always. Shorter is always better. Short is impact. Lose the modifiers unless they're absolutely unconditionally essential, and they almost never are. Adjectives are bad. Verbs are good. Keep the action happening. Bloody the nose.
Okay. So can you walk us through some examples of maybe some of your most successful ads and the clients and what they came to you with in terms of the problem and how you created the ad and what the resulting ad was?
Okay, well, the first decision you have to make when it comes to the ad you're going to write is, are the facts on our side? Are the facts on our side? And if the answer is no, the facts are on the side of our competitor. In that instance, you have to bluff with fluff.
Okay, maybe you can explain both those sentences.
Very simple. To bluff with fluff. There is no mechanical watch on earth. A $20,000 Rolex President cannot keep as good a time as a $30 quartz watch. Did you know that?
No.
Utterly impossible. Now, if your only goal is to tell time, you are an idiot for paying more than $30 for a watch. As a matter of fact, Charlie, you can find out what time it is for free. Just look at your cell phone. Am I right?
Absolutely.
Now, the idea that these watches are accurate, or the idea that a Rolex is, you know, been around for 150 years or blah, 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 who cares? It takes the world's finest craftsman a full year to make a Rolex. Well, yeah, here's a quarter. Call somebody that gives a darn. So an ad that I wrote a number of years ago, it was responsible for selling more Rolexes per capita in the city where it ran than any ad in the history of Rolex. You want to hear the ad?
Sure.
Remember, this is an example of bluffing with fluff. Call it misdirection, if you will. Misdirection. Because I don't want to tell them that what they're paying for is to know what time it is. That's the reality of it. And the competitor is the cell phone, and the cell phone is the obvious winner. Therefore, the ad went like this. You are standing in the snow, 5.5 miles above sea level, gazing at a horizon hundreds of miles away. It occurs to you that life here is very simple. You live or you die. No compromises, no whining, no second chances. This is a place constantly ravaged by wind and storm, where every ragged breath is an accomplishment. You stand on the uppermost pinnacle of the earth. This is the mountain they call Everest. Yesterday it was considered unbeatable, but that was yesterday. As Edmund Hillary surveyed the horizon on the peak of Mount Everest, he monitored the time on a wristwatch that had been specifically designed to withstand the fury of the world's most angry mountain. Rolex believed Sir Edmund would conquer the mountain, and especially for him they created the Rolex Explorer. In every life, there's a Mount Everest to be conquered. When you have conquered yours, you'll find your Rolex waiting patiently for you to come and pick it up at Justice Jewelers. I'm Woody Justice, and I've got a Rolex for you.
So explain what's the emotion, what's the need, the want that you're selling to?
It's a person with a hero fantasy. a person who wants to think, I'm special, I'm an achiever, I'm like Edmund Hillary, I'm taller than most men, you know, I'm prettier, I'm smarter, I'm everything my mommy told me was when I was four, you know? And it's like that whole, I am an adventurer, I am an explorer, this self-image, this need to be a breed apart. I'm the maverick, I'm the renegade, I'm the man's man. And if wearing that watch puts you in the same camp as these great, legendary people who made history, then you buy the watch so you can be in that club. It's why people buy Air Jordans from Nike. It's, the bottom line is, most of what we buy, Charlie, most of what we buy is to simply reinforce our self-image. It's a way of telling the world who we think we are. And so I'm selling an identity when I'm selling a Rolex. And if you get confused and you tell the truth, which is a Rolex will let you know what time it is, people go, gee, I already know what time it is. There's clocks all around me. You're not going to sell the watch. And so you got to know when to bluff with fluff.
Okay, that was a great example. Can you give us another?
Well, when the facts are on your side, you create an ad like I did for Berkeley Grimble.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, dude, you know, you have just this staggering selection of engagement rings. I think we should tell people. And let's see, another ad bluffing with fluff. All right, let's stay in the jewelry category. It was actually a little jewelry store in a place called Walla Walla, Washington. They'd been there for five generations, been there for well over 100 years. They designed the state seal for the state of Washington. And it's kind of like, wow. Now, I walked in, white carpet, I mean white, and it didn't have a vaulted ceiling, it was a domed ceiling, like in a mosque. And it was this fabulous library, you know, paneling, it was walnut. I mean, I felt like I needed to take off my shoes. I mean, they sold all the fine brands, and it was very, you know, amazing. And I went in there, and the owner said, okay, well, we're going to explain to you who our customer is. Our customer is a 40-year-old female and makes an above-average living and comes from money, and they're dressed well, and they smell good, and they come in here, and they have an eye for fashion, and he's giving me the psychographic and demographic profile of his customer. Now, Charlie, here's a problem. We were talking at the beginning of today's session about targeting, what I call over-targeting.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at him, and I said, now, hang on a second. I said, you're about to go under, right? You're about to lose the store. He said, yeah. I said, so evidently this targeting the 40-year-old woman plan hadn't been working out. Do you want me to tell you? You want me to tell you why it hasn't been working out? He said, why? And I said, because you've got a town of 40,000 total population. There is no handle that I can crank that spits out 40-year-old rich women. And I said, we're going to have to open the door a little wider and start bringing people in here who aren't currently coming in. And so quit targeting 40-year-old women. Quit it. And, of course, he almost couldn't comprehend that. You understand?
Yep.
And so I looked around, and it was like September, and if this guy didn't have a really big Christmas, he couldn't pay his bills in January. The store would close after 100 years. And so I said, huh, you don't get a lot of men in here, do you? And he goes, oh, no, 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 men never come in here. No, 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 men don't come in here because this is a farming community. You see, it's actually the asparagus capital of the world. It says so right on the water tower. And these guys are walking around with a big wad of $100 bills in their pocket that would choke a horse. They got enough money in their pocket to buy a new Ford tractor with air conditioning and CD player. But they got mud on their boots, and they're wearing overalls, and they don't feel dressed well enough to come in. These men would stand outside and look in the window, and then the owner would open the door and say, hey, come on in, look around. Oh, no, no, I can't do that, you know. I got things I need to go do. And so I said, okay, men are scared to come in here. There's not enough 40-year-old women for you to stay alive, and you sell incredibly expensive things, and everybody knows it. This is the fancy store in town. There's four other jewelry stores that are all less expensive than you. That's the fact. Now, he didn't want to hear that, right? But it was. So you want to hear the ad?
Yes.
Ladies, many of you will be fortunate enough this Christmas to find a small but beautifully wrapped package under your tree bearing a simple gold seal that says Falkenberg's. Now, you and I both know there's jewelry in the box, but what you need to know is this. the man who put it there for you is trying desperately to tell you that you are more precious than diamonds, more valuable than gold, and very, very special. You see, he could have gone to a department store and bought department store jewelry, or picked up something at the mall, like all the other husbands. But the men who come to Falkenberg's aren't trying to get off cheap or easy. Men who come to Falkenberg's believe their wives deserve the best. And whether they spend $99 or $9,900, it doesn't matter. The message is the same. You see, men who come to Falkenberg's are still very much in love. We just thought you should know. Now, here's what happened, Charlie. The client reads the ad. He goes, well, you don't tell them our location. I said, stupid. You've been here for 105 years. It's a landmark, for God's sake, on Main Street. They know where you are. And here's a hard question for your people, Charlie. Here's my question for them. And then I'll finish the Falkenberg story. The people who aren't doing business with you, is it because they don't know about you? Or is it because they do? Now, most of your people, Charlie, the answer is number one. It's because people don't know about them. But in the case of that little jewelry store in Walla Walla, Washington, everybody knew about them. The problem is that people did know about them. They were friendly, but they were incredibly expensive, and it was a very intimidating store to go into because it was over-decorated. Okay? Now, I was leveraging that in the ad. That store, for the entire month of November and December, men were jammed in it like sardines, waving big wads of cash at the cash register, shouting, I don't care what you put in the box, but make sure it's got that damn gold sticker. And so what happened was I had a record Christmas, made zillions of dollars, and I call that the blackmail ad. Because the bottom line was every man knew that his wife had heard that ad over and over and over and over. So, bingo. He knew he had to buy something from that store. Now, the reason it was important to her is because she knew how scary it was for him to go in there. See, if it wasn't a scary store, the ad would not have worked. Get it? The ad would not have worked. As a matter of fact, a guy up in your part of the country, up in New England, the next Christmas ran that ad and just put his store name on the end. I got a call in January, and he said, are you the man they call the Wizard of Ads? I said, who is this? He told me his name. And I said, who are you? Do I know you? And he said, well, I run that ad that's supposed to work. And I said, well, I have no idea what you're talking about. Had the worst Christmas I've ever had. What do you have to say for yourself? And I said, I need you to tell me a little bit more. What ad are you talking about? And I finally found out it was the ad I had written for this other guy with the really intimidating store, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I had a terrible Christmas. And I said, that ad didn't work at all. And I said, friend, I'm sorry that you had a terrible Christmas, but it's not because the ad didn't work. So the ad did its job. It worked fabulously. I said, the guy that had the expensive, scary, first-class store, he had a hell of a Christmas, and he has you to thank for it. The ad worked, but everybody in your town knew that store wasn't yours. Now do you understand? You got to leverage what you got. What that guy had in the first town was a really intimidating, scary store, and I had to use that to his advantage. Now in the second town, the guy got the exact same ad that had worked miracles 1 year earlier for his buddy. And it totally blew up on him because everybody knew he had a very average store. And it wasn't the scary, intimidating, expensive store in town. And to buy something from his jewelry store in town number two, that doesn't prove anything. But everybody knew, gee, it would mean something if I got her something from Tiffany. Oh, yeah, if I went to Tiffany, that would mean something. Get it?
I get it. And
the simplest thing in the world.
And there's a lesson there, too, which is that everybody's always looking for the magic pill, the ad that's going to work for them. So they look around and see what other people are doing.
Powerful ads are like prescription medicine.
Right.
And it's kind of like, you know, never take another person's medicine. Now, there are ads that are category-specific. There are ads that are product-specific, and then there are ads that are client-specific. The Rolex ad was product-specific. It would work for any jeweler that sold Rolex. But it's not about your jewelry store. It's about the product. It's about Rolex. And then category-specific are typically bad. There's almost no such thing as a good category-specific ad. But what you're after is one that is client-specific, store-specific. And it's about you, and it's true about you, but it won't work for anybody but you. And those ads cannot be handed around. They're not portable. You can't share them.
And they sound like that's the best type of ad.
Yeah, and they're the hardest to write. And it takes the most work and the most agonizing. And the bottom line is, and as we've said throughout the entire show today, Charlie, coming up with the right thing to say, that's the ball game. How to say it is easy. Any idiot can write a good ad once you've gone through the agony of figuring out what the customer might actually care about. What do they feel in their heart? For what would they separate themselves from money?
Now, you got your start, obviously, in radio, and you've done a fair number of radio ads. If you were to take a typical business owner and they said, well, where should I advertise? You know, should I spend it on radio, TV, newspaper, or online? What would you tell them?
It depends upon the competitive environment. In other words, if I knew what business they were in, and I would have to evaluate their competitors. Let's say they sold boats. Okay. I need to take a look at their town. I need to take a look at the other boat dealers in their town. I need to find out who are they selling these boats to and where do these people live. And if they have a competitor that's stronger than 10 acres of garlic in their town, and the guy dominates one media, I'm going to try to do something else. I don't want to take on a deeply entrenched competitor head on. And so it really requires some investigation to say, here is the media that is the right thing for this category. That can't be answered. You have to find out a lot more about the competitors and what the competitors are doing and where the openings are and where the openings aren't. And as much as I wish there were simple, straightforward answers, Charlie, there aren't.
So here's another sort of myth I just want to see if you're interested in debunking, which is, you know, if you look at where ad dollars are going these days, everybody's enamored with online advertising and the web. And I get local business owners, you know, they have a shop in one town, they can only serve a small geographic region, and they come to me and say, you know, I want to spend a lot of money working on my website so it generates leads and sales. And many times my goal is to try to persuade them to do what we've been talking about, which is much more direct response marketing. And what's your opinion on sort of the shift to online marketing versus, and the abandonment, it seems to be, to some degree, of direct response marketing?
Okay. The bottom line is most people that try to do some e-commerce fail miserably. And when I say most people, it's 99 out of 100. Because, again, they approach the Internet under this illusion that the Internet is going to let them target because of Google AdWords and all these keyword searches and all this blah, 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 blah. And it all makes perfect sense. It just almost never works. Now, I was talking to a client yesterday, and we help them. I don't even mind telling you who it was. You can go to their website. It's called Cool Horse, C-O-O-L-H-O-R-S-E, coolhorse.com. And he does millions of dollars a year selling things for horses and Western things, you know. And he's up 79% year-to-date on his website. Now, you know why? Because I told him the custard story. And I said, we need to post once a week just an absolute blowout of something that any idiot that looks at it is going to know, oh, my God, that's a bargain. And I said, no, they're going to put something in the shopping cart because it's just irresistible. And then let's just see how much more they put in that shopping cart before they check out. And whenever you, and he did it. He did it, and it has worked miraculously, unbelievably well, which only goes to say what I've been saying the entire show, Charlie, the vehicle that you use to deliver the message, whether it's direct mail, radio, TV, or the Internet, the vehicle of delivery doesn't matter nearly so much as what the heck it is you're saying. And when you're saying Coca-Cola, $1 for a case of 24 cans, guess what? You don't have to say much else.
People are going to buy it.
Bingo. Now, what I'm saying is you don't have to lose money on that either. If you get clever and you do all your work figuring out how you can make these powerful offers, and by the way, these obvious ones have been price offers. The Rolex ad wasn't a price offer. That watch is $20,000. but it was an emotional appeal. And to say, what's my best strategy? What's my best message? And the very last thing you want to do, I mean the very last, is to say, and how should I deliver this message? Until you get the basic idea and the message put together, don't even worry about how you're going to deliver it. Everybody wants to run off and choose the media before they decide what they have to say. Great. You're just playing a slot machine, and you're going to go home a loser.
Once people have the message, they have their ad, they've decided in the media, you know, one of the things people are always concerned about is, well, how quickly are they going to get a response from their ad?
Depends on the power of the ad. The end. And once again, it sounds like I'm beating a dead horse, but this is, I'm just trying to make the point, Charlie. Everything revolves around that ad. And the right ad works regardless of the media that you use to deliver it. The wrong ad fails regardless of the media you use to deliver it. And so since the internet is the newest, right, and it has all kinds of numbers that you can look at and get all this false confidence, then everybody's all excited about the internet. And I'm going, the internet is no different than direct mail or radio or cable TV. You write an ad that matters, and it'll work. You write an ad that doesn't matter, and it's going to fail. The end.
So in summary, what's the most important thing anyone listening to this call could do in the next week to better advantage of advertising?
Quit deluding yourself about things people don't care about. In other words, find somebody that cares about you who doesn't agree with what you've been doing, and somebody that's just very plain spoken and almost simple. Maybe it's your father-in-law, you know, just somebody that thinks you're an idiot. And everything they say is just way oversimplified. Sit them down and say, look, I want you to say to me the things you think I need to hear. You know, why do people not eat at my restaurant? And they'll look at you and say, Charlie, your food sucks. Now, until you have found that friend, okay, you really can't get outside the box. You have to find somebody in your life. And Charlie, my business, I'm just that guy for hire. I charge an enormous amount of money to be that guy that just looks at you and says, shut up. Nobody cares. Your food sucks. And your service is not too hot either. And until you fix that, we're not going to have a restaurant. And see, that's what most business owners lack. They surround themselves with false optimism and false assurances and happy people that just want to pat them on the back and give them encouragement. And I'm going, you know, when you're off the mark, nobody wants to be rude enough to tell you. And you've got to find somebody who will tell you, because there is no perspective more warped than being on the inside looking out. It's hard to read the label when you're inside the bottle. And every one of your listeners right now, Charlie, is inside the bottle. They need somebody outside the bottle to tell them what that sucker looks like. Read the label. Tell me what I don't see.
Good advice. So, Roy, if our listeners want to learn more about advertising and more about tapping into your extensive knowledge, what are their options? What products or services should they know about?
The first thing I would do is go to MondayMorningMemo.com. And MondayMorningMemo.com is the chapters of all my next book. As soon as we're done building this 32-acre campus, we've got 11 major buildings now on campus. And we'll be finishing the last one just after the first of the year, and then we'll start publishing books again. But all those books, if you want to read the next four or five books, they're all online in the archives at MondayMorningMemo.com. And then they can go to WizardAcademy.com. And next week, I'll tell you another book everybody should get. And I didn't write this one. It's a book called Marketing Outrageously by John Spolstra. Spolstra is spelled S-P-O-E-L-S-T-R-A. Now, John and I have never met face-to-face, but we've always admired each other's work. He's going to be here next week to teach a two-day class. But Marketing Outrageously by John Spolstra, it'll just rock your world. And he says a lot of what we've talked about today, but he says it better than I do. And so I would say if a person only had, you know, $15 or $20 left in the whole world, that's roughly the price of the book, go buy it.
So, and after that, what are their options in terms of...
Oh, gee. you do want to hold your advertising accountable. You need to figure out if you want to do your own advertising or pay somebody to do it for you. You need to, if you hire somebody else or if you do it yourself, you need to know what to look for. In other words, we have a lot of classes at Wizard Academy. We get business owners literally from all over the world, from little tiny businesses to Fortune 500 companies. And they'll find that at wizardacademy.org, which is our nonprofit business school. And maybe they'll find something there that would help them. But it's an educational process. And, Charlie, the thing is, you want to learn from other people's mistakes. You see, a smart man makes a mistake, learns from it, and never makes that mistake again. But a wise man finds a smart man and learns from him how not to make that mistake to begin with.
There you go.
And so most of what your listeners need to do is find a wise man, and it's either somebody like John Spolstra, who's already made the mistakes. My books are okay. There are other books out there that are okay. I still am a big fan of Michael Gerber's E-Myth. I think most small business owners need to read the E-Myth. And good luck to them. Like I said, it's painful, and there's a lot of trial and error, but there are certain fundamental mistakes that can be avoided if a person just has the brazen coldness to look in the mirror and say, it isn't going to be the way I wish it was. I'm going to have to get in step with how it really is.
Well, that's good advice, and I greatly appreciate your taking the time to talk with us today. And thank you so much for a great interview, Roy.
Yeah, thank you, Charlie.